Okay, we were in the middle of Perek Zion, and what we had basically identified was that the name, the identity of the presenter or speaker in Perek Zion is the Chacham. It's the first time we're introduced to the Chacham, and our goal today is to kind of finalize his presentation to each of his colleagues. A little bit we dealt with the presentation to the Ne'er Natan. We're going to finish that and then move on to the Yireh and the Chacham. That is the Yireh and the Amal. And then try to pull it together to see exactly what his overarching philosophy is. What can we say about who and what the Chacham is trying to present? But more or less, we saw that the presentation in Perek Zion divides into three components. He starts with the description of the contrast between death and Shiva and mourning and Evel, the end of the thing rather than the beginning, and all of that in contrast to the day of birth, the celebration and the joy and the simcha and the song of the fool, all of that referring to, in the language of the Chacham, the worldview of the Ne'er Natan. And the last thing we touched on was the reference to Tov Shem Mishemen Tov. I sort of left that for the end because that sort of parallels Yom HaMavet Miyom Hivaldo and Acharit Davar from Reshito. To put it simply, the day of death, the latter, the future, the end of thing rather than the beginning, Yom Hivaldo, day of birth, the Shem referring to the name we leave behind in this world. It's a little bit of a play on the word Tov Shem and Shemen Tov. And the Shemen referring to what was in biblical times and still till today. The standard practice is a baby is born, literally coming out of the womb. It's covered in blood. It's covered in liquid. It's covered in fluids that dry the skin out very quickly. And so the first thing you do is to kind of smear oil or smear some sort of cream on the baby in order to remove all of that schmutz and all of that cream. That's the shemen of birth. And you see it referenced explicitly in Sefer Yechezkel, where he's talking about, with the Navi, he's talking about this description of a baby found literally cast away in the fields after birth. And so it's sort of wallowing in its own fluids of birth. Right? That's the blood that it's in. And therefore, the description of washing away all that blood and then smoothing the skin with asuchach mashemen of with some sort of oil. That's the reference here to Tov Shem Mishemen Tov and Yom HaMavet Miyom Hivaldo. That's the parallel. And in all cases, the reference to the Ne'er Natan, who said that the job in this world is to enjoy, is to benefit, is to receive and sort of God's bounty, if you will, but also just to kind of recognize that despite all that the world has challenges in the world, man's job is to simply receive and to benefit and to enjoy it. And the Ne'er Natan and the Chacham turns to him and says, that's ridiculous. There is a very significant component of this world that you cannot just, quote unquote, enjoy. Death, mourning, the world is finite. There's so much in that, in the reality that you can't just kind of enjoy the ride, so to speak. And so he rejects the world of the Ne'er Natan on that basis. Tov Shem Mishemen Tov, Yom HaMavet Miyom Hivaldo. The reality is death exists and you have to recognize it and that way, and you take it to heart and you cannot therefore go through life just with the philosophy of the Ne'er Natan. And that's how he ends this part of his presentation. But then we move on to the Amal and the Yirei Elokim, or the Chacham's reaction to each. I'm actually going to start with the latter. I'm going to start with the Yirei Elokim, only because it's simpler to understand. And once we understand the Yirei Elokim, his remarks to the Yirei Elokim, we'll come back and try to break down his remarks to the Amal. So we're going to start actually, I'm going to do this out of order. I'm going to do part one, part three, and then come back to part two. Everybody with me? And the journey begins. So let's pick it up from Pasuk Tetvav. We're going to go back to the text, which is here. So let's start from Pasuk Tetvav. And we read it through last week, so I'm just going to kind of pick up right into the kind of analysis of it. And assuming he's now talking to the Yirei Elokim, the trademarks of his address to each personality, I think, is self-evident. Actually, on that source page, I highlighted the words that tell you who he's speaking to. So in the case of the Nenatan, he's currently talking about Mishnah and Tzchok and Simcha. These are identity cards of the Nenatan. That's who he's speaking to. In the Amal's case, he's talking about Nachala and Kesef, and we'll talk about the Ka'as, the anger that the Amal demonstrated in a few minutes. That is certainly to the Amal. And in the context of the Yireh, we see words like Tzaddik, Rasha, the righteous, the wicked. Those are certainly concepts of the Yireh Elokim, and so that is where we are turning our attention. Says the Chacham to the Yireh Elokim, Al tihi tzaddik harbeh. Don't be overly righteous. Don't be what we would call in classic English language an Oyber Chacham. Everybody know what an Oyber Chacham is? Right? I'm assuming you all know what an Oyber Chacham is. Don't be overly smart.
No.
Don't. Excuse me?
Can you please explain what that is?
That's a hard one. Oyber Chacham, as somebody have a good translation of it? It's a Yiddish word for somebody who is overly. It translates literally as super wise or overly wise, but it's usually in
Smarty
a.
Smarty
not
pants?
better than everybody else.
Excuse
Would you
me?
say
Marty pants?
wise for your own good?
Yeah, too smart for your own good, I guess.
Smarty
Thank
pants?
you.
Yeah. Oh, the
Smart
tzaddikim
Alec?
bay. Excuse me?
Smart Alec? Or is
Smart
that
Alec,
already
okay.
too negative?
Yeah, it's okay. If you don't get it, it's okay. It was just a
No,
way of.
I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Al tzaddikim bay. Don't be so wise. Don't be so righteous. Lama tishomim. Why should you self-destruct? What does it mean, why should you self-destruct? Meaning, if you spend your life pursuing only that which is the life of a tzaddik, let's put it into modern terms. You want to be a super tzaddik and you want to be religious and devoted, etc. At the end of the day, there's so much that in the world you're just going to wallow away your life in kind of spiritual activities and never live in this world. That's not a way to live. I'm a teacher, man. You destroy yourself. You have no reality in the here and now. On the other hand, al tirsharbe, don't be too wicked. Al tisachal, don't be a fool. Right? So to be overly righteous is to be too wise. To be overly wicked is to be too foolish. Why? Lama tamut b'lo. You'll die prematurely. In a word, crime doesn't pay, right? You'll be a member of the mob. That's not going to help you any. You're not going to get a life insurance policy if you take out a life of crime. So al tisharbe, don't be too wicked. Don't be a fool.
I'm sorry, who is he speaking to at this point?
He's
'Cause
speaking
I'm
to the Yirei Elokim.
okay, because I mean the Yirei Elohim, you wouldn't think of him as being someone who's going to be wicked.
No, that's exactly his point. He's saying, okay, you want to say, okay, fear God and do mitzvot. So he turns to him and he says, you know what? I'm going to give you a new way of looking at life. Don't be too wicked and don't be too righteous and don't be too wicked. Just kind of cool, chill. Chill. That's what he's going to say to him. And that's his conclusion. Tova shetechoz bazeh v'gam bazeh al tanach yetidecha. Kirei Elokim yetzeh kulam. You want to quote unquote, fear God. So a little bit of righteousness, a little bit of wickedness, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Balance it all out and learn to chill. Just take it a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Tova shetachoz bazeh, become mizeh tanach yetecha. What's the zen mizeh? Tzaddik and Masha. So don't be overly righteous and don't be overly wicked. And in the end, you'll balance it out.
Go with the flow.
Excuse me?
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow. When in Rome, as they say, right? When in Rome. This sentence kind of gets stuck here into the middle. In a minute, he's going to go back to the tzaddik and the rasha paradigm. But he inserts into the middle of this description a kind of a statement that says, rather than being overly wicked and overly wise, rather than looking at the world from the spiritual vantage point of tzaddik and rasha, look at the world from the vantage point of the chacham. The chacham, wisdom, stronghold of man, better than 10 rulers in the city. It's sort of like the identity card of the chacham. This is me. I'm speaking. I'm the chacham. Ta'oz la'chachma ta'oz la'chacham is a defense of the wise, better than 10 rulers in the city. This could have been inserted anywhere in the parak. It just becomes a kind of a identity of who's speaking. Why it's here, I'm not sure it's here necessarily for a reason other than it could go in anywhere, but it's rather than being at the beginning, it's inserted in the middle. I don't know if you're familiar with the parak of Tehillim that deals with, we say it every Rosh Chodesh, that has a kind of review of the creation of the world. It starts Baruch Nafshi, and we say it every Rosh Chodesh as part of the davening. It literally goes through every day of creation, and it summarizes more or less what was created on each day, and it kind of works through the story of creation. About two-thirds down the line, down the page, you'll find a verse that says, Marabu Masech Hashem, Kulam B'chokhma Asita. How beautiful is the creation of the world, everything created with wisdom. It has no place in the middle of where it's placed. It's just a random dumped in the middle of the text, but it essentially is the summary of the whole parak. And that's not uncommon structurally in these kinds of books of philosophy to kind of take a key phrase or a key sentence and put it into the middle of the discussion. So I think that's more or less what's going on here. Chochmata oz l'chacham, the wisdom is the stronghold for the wise, as a way of saying, I'm giving you key advice here. Listen carefully. Back to the theme of the tzaddik and the rasha. Yadam ein tzaddik ba'aretz ashi yaseh tov v'lo yechta. It comes back to the question of why shouldn't you pursue a life of righteousness, comes along the chacham and says, so the reality is, it's not possible. There's no such thing as a tzaddik in the world who does only good and never sin, and never sins. Doesn't happen. I think I skipped a pasuk. Did I skip? Pasuk Tedvav? I did. I apologize. We really need to start from Pasuk Tedvav, because I think that's a key piece of the story. His speech to the Yirei Elokim starts in Pasuk Tedvav, not in Pasuk Tedzayin. I started one pasuk too late. I apologize. I'll come back to what we were before in a minute, but this is a very important statement. He starts with the declaration of this kind of analysis of the world, and he says, "Et kol reiti bimei hevli, yesh tzadik oved b'tzidko, v'yesh rasha ma'arich b'ra'ato." I have seen the righteous perish in their righteousness, meaning who spend their lives sort of circling around their own spiritual endeavors and literally perish because they have not accomplished anything in this world. And on the other hand, I have seen the wicked who live very long, evil-doing lives. And he tangentially touches on a very sensitive nerve in that statement. He's going to expand on that nerve in much greater detail in a later chapter, which is the first time he's really addressed the question here of the righteous who suffer and the wicked who prosper. Okay, that theodicy question of tzaddik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo, is articulated here in there's the tzaddik who self-destroys, who perishes in his righteousness, and the wicked who lives long, healthy lives. Yesh v'sham arich barato. Good life. Good life. And so that's sort of his starting point for turning to the Yirei Elokim and saying, Al ti tzadik ame. Tisha B'Av. Don't be too righteous. Don't be too wicked. You can get caught in this loop of the righteous who self-destruct and the wicked who survive in wickedness. So his conclusion is Tova Shetachos, a little bit of this, balance it all out. That was more or less where we started. I just missed the opening sentence. I apologize. Sorry. Yeah, now main Sadiq Baretz. That's where we're up to. There's not a righteous man on earth who does good and doesn't sin. Nobody's perfect. Everybody has faults. And if you try to live a life by which you define the criteria as a life of righteousness, you're going to fail. And if you fail, you're going to be frustrated. So you're better off not assuming that the goal is to be overly righteous, purely righteous, right? That's not the goal. You're looking. And you'll ask me, so what's so terrible if you try to live a life of righteousness? Why? So even if you fail, but at least you try to achieve something that was worthwhile, Sadiq Baretz says, Kohelet, ki l'chol ha'dvarim asher yedaberu al titen libecha, shelo tishmat avdecha mekalelecha. Take heed to all the words that are spoken, because you will hear, or don't take heed. You shouldn't hear your own servant curse you. What does that mean? It means that there's a certain element in life in which the reality is, coming back to Ein Tzadik Baretz Asheyah Setov Lo Yachta, that you can try to live this pure, isolated, idyllic life, and you're going to be exposed, you're going to be frustrated, because you're going to be exposed to moments in which somebody who you cared for, somebody who you looked after, somebody who you raised, somebody who was close to you, somebody who owed you a favor, somebody who you were good to, they're going to turn around and they're going to stab you in the back. They're going to turn around and curse you. Why? Because that's the world. Because that's the world we live in. And if you try to live in this kind of idyllic, righteous world in which everybody's good to everybody else, you're going to find that not everybody is good to everybody else. And you're going to get stabbed in the back. And your own Evan is going to curse you, which is a euphemism, which is an idiom for you're going to get stabbed in the back. Not only that, it's even worse. Ki gam pa'mim avot yada libecha, asher gam ata kilalta acherim. Because, my dear Yirei Elokim, you think you're such a tzaddik, we've already established, Ein tzaddik baretz ashiyasa tov lo yachta, nobody is such a righteous person. And I'm sure there are times when you have turned and you have cursed others. And so you take it to heart, you take it to the sensitivity of saying, oh, you don't want to hear your own servant stab you and your own servant curse you. I bet you've done it to others as well. So rather than pretend that you are such a righteous person, just acknowledge the fact that nobody's perfect, and we're going to all live this kind of accepting, mediocre life in which everybody accepts everybody else for what they are. You, Yirei Elokim, not too righteous, not too wicked. Everybody accepts everybody for what they are. That's more or less where he ends up. We're going to see the rejection of the Chacham next week, because, of course, this is an intolerable perspective. But that's where he ends up with these last two statements. The only thing I will add to it is that there is a part of what he's addressing is the fact that there's a certain sensitivity around the world of righteousness in which you need to kind of protect the soul, the spirit, the soul, or the sensitivity of the righteous soul from the exposure to a world in which there really is such a lot of, lack of a better term, schmutz out there, right? The notion that it's a tzaddik has to kind of isolate themselves a little bit from the exposure to a world of cursing as a kind of an idiom for, or euphemism for, or metaphor for a kind of an evil world, an even a cruel world, a world in which people are cruel to each other, because that's the nature of human beings. There's a danger in that, because the more isolated we become, the more the smallest, right? If I use an analogy from the world of immunity, if you isolate somebody from exposure to various negative forces, they lose their own immunity, right? We become stronger. We become more immune. We become stronger because we expose ourselves to the elements and we develop a certain immunal defense. A person who sort of isolates themselves from the outside world in order to avoid the exposure to the cursing evid, if you will, kind of ends up in a world in which even the smallest attack or the smallest confrontation with that spiritual equilibrium can challenge them. And so we become stronger in a certain way by being exposed to the world around us. That's sort of at the heart of what he's addressing here, that kind of a life of acceptance of mediocrity and tolerance. A little bit of righteousness is good, but too much is self-destructive. A little bit of wickedness is okay, but too much is self-defeating. And so, in the end, Tov asher techoz bazeh v'gam bazeh al tanach yadecha. Sort of this philosophy of ultimately of resigning oneself to the reality of the world around us without trying to push the boundaries of the human being or their spiritual devotion too much. Learn to live with the impurities and the imperfections of the human being. Which is a very, like I said, it's a very harsh kind of perspective. Again, he's going to reject it, but that's where the Chacham starts from. All right, let's go back to, so that was the summary of the world of the Yirei, of the Chacham to the Yirei Elokim. He starts with this reference to the Tzaddik, who self-destructs in righteousness, meaning the Tzaddik who suffers, and the Rasha who has a good life, Marich Berato. And so his conclusion is, don't be too righteous, don't be too wicked, learn to live with a kind of a balance of both, because nobody's perfect, and if you try to live a perfect world of pure spirituality, of pure righteousness, of pure Yirei Elokim, then you're going to find that you're going to get stabbed in the back, you're not perfect either, you're going to hurt yourself, others are going to hurt you, it's just you're better off accepting the world for what it is. Okay, that's the world of the Chacham. Now the world of the Amal. Says the Chacham to the Amal, let's go back now to Pasuk Chet, to Yudalad. Says the Chacham to the Amal. Remember, we started from the second half of this verse, because the first half is related to the previous section. Tov erech ruach mikvar ruach. Better to be patient than to be proud or arrogant. Al tivahel beruchacha lichos. Do not be hasty in your spirit to be angry. Ki kas bechek ksilim minoach. Because anger rests in the bosom of fools. So of course there's a direct connection here, right? Patience, erech ruach, is the opposite of arrogance in this context, right? You be patient rather than be proud, because the person who is proud, is also the person who is angry. Meaning there's a direct correlation here between anger and arrogance. The anger is a component of the arrogance. A person who is arrogant, he thinks that the world kind of revolves around them or around what they expect from the world. And when that doesn't happen, they get frustrated. They don't have the patience to sort of see it out, and they get angry. What's the old expression? Anger is a function of expectation. Right? So that or arrogance, that is that's essentially the calling card here. Tov erech ruach mikvar ruach. You better to be patient than to be arrogant. Arrogant leads to anger. Do not let yourself become angry. Anger rests in the bosom of fools. And he's going to come back to this issue about anger in a moment as well. Al tomar ma she'aya she'yamim harishanim ayu tovim me'ela. Don't think that, the good old days, right? Don't be frustrated about, oh, the good old days. Those were the good old days. Ki lo mechochma sha'alta al zeh. That's not a question, or that's not acting wisely. Same theme. Mashayash al tomar mashayash amim rishonim hayum tovim me'ela. Don't be arrogant enough to think that you are in control. Right? This frustration of the good old days means that, again, it's a function of the expectation or the arrogance that you think that the world should be in a certain way. It should look a certain way. It should act a certain way. It should feel a certain way. And it doesn't. So you bemoan the good old days when maybe you thought things were better. Right? That's part of that gevah ruach. That's part of that arrogance and part of that anger. The world is not yours to control. Now, of all of the personalities that we've encountered so far, who was the one who felt most directly that the world was theirs to control? Was the world of the Amma. Right? The Amma was the exact opposite, was the foil of the Ne'natan. The Ne'natan said, we're in no control because God is in control. And the Amma said, no, we're in total control. The Yirei Elokim kind of navigated between them. We'll come back to him a little bit later. Right? Whereas the Chacham says to the Amal, you think you are in control? If you think you're in control, you're going to be very frustrated. And that frustration and that arrogance that you think everything is in your control, the Yirei Elokim also spoke to the Amal as a function of arrogance, right? Is going to lead you to anger. That's self-destructive. The next two sentences more or less kind of connect with the same idea, namely that the advantage or the preference is to the world of the Chacham than the world of the Amal, much like the calling card in the middle of the, or identity card in the middle of the words of the Chacham to the Yirei. Tova chochma im nachala. Wisdom is good together with inheritance, together with worldly possessions. That's already, that's very good. That's, if you can have both, that's ideal. But yoter, which is the same as the word yitron, right? The advantage is to shemesh, those that see the sun. That's the metaphor from the very beginning of the book to the world of the chacham, light, wisdom, understanding. Ki betzel ha-chochma betzel ha-kasef. Wisdom is a defense, even as money is a defense. It's a shade, it's a protection. But yitron da'at ha-chochma techeye bala. But in the end, wisdom is that which will preserve the life of the one who has it. Same idea as he articulated down below in Pasuk Yotet, ha-chochma ta'oz le-chacham. So he kind of inserts into his description or his attack on the Amal the same kind of advantage to the Chacham. And he comes back to the Amal, who essentially wanted to control the world and perfect it and establish a kind of a perpetuity, an eternal character to his achievements in the world, says the Amal, Chacham to the Amal, Re'et Maseh Elokim. Let's consider the work of God. What is the work of God? Man. And man is mortal. Ki mi yachol l'taken et asher ivto. Who can make crooked that which God, who can make straight that which God made crooked? Meaning, there's a fundamental flaw in the creation of the world, and he's going to say it again later in the book. There is a fundamental flaw in creation, and that is mortality. Mortality. You think you can live forever by your achievements, by your buildings, by your air, by your society, by your malchus, all the themes that the Amal tried to conquer death by creating a kind of eternality, right? This notion of Yerusha, of Nachla, of inheritance from generation to generation through an heir, through a society. So God made a crooked component of the world, right? Martin, God created death in this world. So you think you can conquer it? That's not going to work. B'yom tova ye betov. On a good day, let's see if I skip some. B'yom tova ye betov. In a day of prosperity, b'yom tova, on a good day, be good. U'v'yom ra'a, in the day of adversity, a bad day. So consider this. God has made both. God made good days, God made bad days. God made success, God made failures. God made a world in which there are mistakes. Okay. In the end, man cannot find anything after him. This world is finite. And again, he comes to the same kind of perspective that he said to the Chacham, which is, you're trying to change the world, but the world is not changeable. The world is a world in which there's good things and there's bad things. And so you're better off just accepting it as it is, rather than trying to modify it, change it, conquer it. Right? God created things that are crooked, so what, do you think you can fix it? You're so arrogant and angry all the time because you think you can fix the world. You're not going to be able to fix this world. So don't be so angry and don't be so arrogant. That's the Chacham's message to the Amal. Just fascinating. I once used this idea to compare, Lahavdil, on a different level, the Rambam's description of the relationship between anger and arrogance. There's a very famous passage of the Rambam in the laws, in his introduction to the Mishnah Torah. He talks in the laws of knowledge or ideas, Chotayot. He talks about this idea that every character trait of the human being, we should navigate in the middle, right? This idea of the golden mean, an Aristotelian notion of the golden mean, that we should kind of be balanced in our, in everything we do in our lives in terms of a middle path, which is more or less what Kohelet is arguing in this chapter, although to an extreme. There are only two characteristics which the Rambam writes one should not take as a balance approach. Yesh de'ot she'asula l'adam linhog behen bibbeinoniyut. There are certain temperaments a person should never have kind of this middle path to, but rather you should distance themselves from completely. Yitrachek min ha'katzer ha'chad al ha'katzer ha'cher. And they are Gvar lev, arrogance, and kaas, and anger. And he, in both of these cases, he says, a magbia libo kafar b'igah, one who is arrogant is as if they've denied God. Because arrogance means that I'm in control of the world. Why am I arrogant? I think that I'm in control of the world. And if I'm in control of the world, that means that God is not. So that's heresy. And similarly, anger is a function of that same arrogance. And so he says one should distance themselves from anger completely. Same idea. If one is angry, it's as if they're worshipping idols. So he connects these two ideas, and I think Kohelet does too. And he says to the Amal, he says, your anger, right? There's nobody in Kohelet who is more angry than the Amal. But you remember the Amal is the one who said to the Nehenatan, he talked about God created the world and God left this, runs this world. And the Amal's response to that was, well, what are you going to do with all of the people who are oppressed in this world? What about the tier of the oppressed? When he referred to in Perek Dalet as the Dim'ata Ashukim. And the Nenatan's answer to that is, God will judge, God will hold everybody accountable. That's God's department, not man's. And the response of the Amal was to say, I'd rather not be born in such a world. I'd rather not live in such a world, right? The oppressed and the downtrodden and the people, hurting people, like that's not a world we can live in. We have to do something about it. We have to change this world and fix this world. That's the world of the Amal. That's even the Yirei Elokim said to him, calm down because, right? When you enter into the world of the temple, let your words be few and listen more than do, right? Tov lishmo karov lishmo mitetak silim zavach. The Amal's philosophy was, this world is mine and I can change it, whether it be through my actions or my children's actions or society's actions or the king's actions. Comes along the Chacham and says, A, Don't be so angry. This world's not yours. And B, you can't change it. So learn to live with it and accept it. B'yom tov v'yei b'tov v'yom ra'a v'yei gam etzeh l'um etzeh. So you can already begin to see a pattern here, because his message to each one of the three personalities is more or less along the same lines. They each try to address a certain challenge in this world, and to each one of them, Kohelet's response is, you're trying to create perfection. The world's not perfect. So you need to live with you need to accept, resign yourself to the fact that there's a balance in life. The world is not perfect. To the righteous, to the Yirei Elokim, who wanted to seek perfection for the human being, the Chacham says to him, the world, the human being is not perfect. Al ti tzedik arbe. Al ti shayar be. Don't be too wicked, don't be too righteous. Right? There is those righteous who self-destruct, and there are wicked who prosper in life. That's part of the world we live in. And so, my dear Yirei Elokim, learn to live with the fact that there is wickedness in this world, and accept that. Don't try to change the human being. To the Amal, his response was, don't try to change the world. The world is not perfect. There is an imperfection in this world. There is a flaw in this world. There are good days. There are bad days. The man is mortal, right? There's an ivut. There's a corruption in this world that you can't avoid. And that's death. And therefore, the mortality is something which you can't avoid. So you, Amal, who tried to create immortality through your buildings and amass and wealth and who you're going to leave it to and where you're going, what's going to happen to it. And the Amal, more than anybody else, who was bemoaning the fact that in the end of the day, everything is in the grave and I need to figure out a way to conquer death, comes along the Chacham and says, well, but it's a part of the world we live in. So learn to live with it. B'yom tov, yeh b'tov, v'yom ra'a. So learn to live with it. And to the Nehenatan, who said, the world is, I'm going to enjoy this ride, right? Tov, Shem and Tov, and the Mishteh, and Achila, and drinking, and eating, and enjoying the world, comes along the Chacham, and he says, you're ignoring a key component of reality. A key component of reality is mortality. So you can close your eyes and be blind to it, or you can open up your eyes and accept it. That's part of the reality of the world we live in. Take it to heart. So to pull it all together, we now have a little bit of a picture of kind of the main themes that are going to work through the second half of the book. If you remember, we talked about the fact that Kohelet more or less anchors around two kind of major themes that are overarching themes that kind of are the structure of the book. The first half primarily dealt with the question of good and evil. What actions should I take that are good? What actions should I take that, or should I avoid that are evil, that are ra, tov and ra? The second half of the book, for the most part, is going to deal with the question of chaim and mavet, life and death. And how do we deal with meaningful lives in the shadow of mortality when death exists all around us? And so and those are the two trees. If you remember, we talked about the trees of Gan Eden, that Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beit HaMikdash. These are the two trees that anchor the world of Gan Eden. The Olam Hazeh essentially navigates between Olam, this world, Tov and Ra, good and evil, knowledge, authority, control, and life and death, ultimately mortality. In the context of the question, what do we do with, how do we deal with the meaningful life in the shadow of death? We now have a partial answer for each one of approach of each one of our key personalities. The Ne'anatan, if I asked you the question, what essentially was the answer of the Ne'anatan? How does he address the question of death? What is the approach of the Ne'anatan to mortality? The answer would be, he ignores it. He ignores it. His job is to, and he says so explicitly, he says, if I go back to it's in chapter 3 where he talks about kimia ein tov me'asher yismach. Well, I'm not going to start jumping around, but he says ein tov me'asher yismach adam b'masav kiuchelko. There's nothing better than man to enjoy his deeds, to enjoy his portion in the world. Kimi yivien. Actually, it's worth saying. Kimi yivienu lirot b'mashiyeh acharav. This is the speech of the Nehenah in Perek Yemul. Ve'iti ki ein tov ma'asher yismach adam b'ma'asav ki uchako. I saw that there's nothing better than man should rejoice in his works. Ki mi yivienu b'ma'asher acharav, because who can bring man to see what will be after him? Mortality is a closed door. And because mortality is a closed door, all I have is this world, so enjoy it, enjoy the ride. That's all I have, so that's all I need. Yismach adam b'ma'asav, enjoy it. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. Or we will die. Ki mi yivienu lirot b'ma'asher acharav. Which, by the way, is a pasuk in Yeshayahu. Acho v'shato ki machar namut. Eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. The Gemara calls that the greatest statement of kfira, of heresy, and chilul Hashem, of desecration of God's name. Because it denies God's role in the world, and it denies the existence of anything beyond the definition of beyond death. That's exactly the world of the Ne'anatan. To which the Chacham responds appropriately, and says, well, actually we'll get to the response of the Chacham. So that's the world of the Ne'anatan. Ignore death. What was the response of the Amal to that, right? The Amal who said, I can't live in such a world. So the Amal's answer to death was, conquer it, overcome it, fight with it. The Amal struggles, fights with mortality in every moment of his day. He tries to build. He tries to build buildings that will outlive him. He tries to build achievements that will outlive him. He tries to build a society that will outlive him. He tries to create an heir to his efforts that will outlive him. And when he's frustrated and he can't, and all he can do is take what he's achieved and consume it himself, he realizes that's not an answer to the question of mortality. And so he writes himself out of the script. But that was essentially the world of the Amal. Comes along the Chacham, and the array we haven't seen yet. The array Elohim is the one question of how he deals with the question of mentality, which we haven't addressed yet. That's coming a little bit later. Comes along the Chacham and says, you can't ignore death. Ne'anatan, you cannot ignore death. You want to ignore death? Go to a Shiva house. Okay, I think it's one of the most profound statements in the entire book. Today we understand that more than any other. Tov lelecha d'beit evel ki achai yiten libo. You cannot ignore death. What you do with it, that's a separate question, but you cannot ignore it. To the Amal who tried to conquer death, mi yuchal letaken et asher ivto. Who can possibly fix that which was, by definition, made crooked? The human being was never supposed to die. It was created immortal. Man perverted that in the Garden of Eden. It's a perversion. It's crooked. You can't do anything about it. You can't fix it. So Amal, stop trying to fix and conquer that which you have no control over. And as to the Yirei Elohim, he says, he hasn't addressed the question of death yet because we don't know what the Yirei Elohim says about it. But ultimately, he says, same philosophy of resignation. Learn to accept, resign yourself to a reality in which the world is not perfect. Navigate as best you can through the middle road. Don't be too righteous. Don't be too wicked. Don't be too wealthy. Don't be too poor. Don't be too successful, right? Just navigate through a middle of the road. Live life as best you can. Just accept there are flaws. There are mistakes. There are issues you have no control over. in a word, the philosophy of the Chacham, chill. Chill. Yirei Elokim, chill. Not so righteous, not so wicked. Chacham, Amal, chill. Don't build so much. Don't think you can conquer death. Nenatan, chill. You want to waste your wife away, waste your life away in a feasting of Beit Simcha? You know what? There are also moments of tragedy in this world. So you have to learn to balance all of that. In a more sophisticated expression, I would say, rather than chill, I would say his philosophy of it's an imperfect world. Do not delude yourself into thinking that you can seek a perfect God. Do not delude yourself into thinking that you can seek a perfect world. Do not delude yourself into thinking you can seek a perfect man. Not the Yirei Elokim, not the Amal, not the Ne'enatan. None of them are actually going to succeed. In the end, the purpose is to kind of resign yourself to the imperfections of the world. That's the world of the Chacham. I'm going to stop here for a minute, and we still have 10 minutes. So actually, I finished a few minutes early. We might actually start the next unit, but I'm going to stop for a few minutes and see if anybody has any questions before we move further.
Rabbi?
Yes.
It's Claudette. All Judaism, when you look at Tanakh and Torah, is you can get the sense that they're trying to ask the human being to have a balanced life. And sometimes we question why Kohelet is in the canon. And if you, by what you are showing us now, we can see that what he's trying to do is to tell us to have a balanced life.
Yes, I would say, but with a caveat. In the end, the message of Kohelet is going to be to pull together threads of each of the personalities of the book and to create what I would call an integrated Torah personality. So the Yirei Elokim at the end is going to take a part of what the Chacham says into his world. But on itself, what he's saying is very complicated. Because in itself, what he's saying is everything's imperfect, including God. I want to reiterate, this is very important. The phrase, Mi yuchalet takenet asher ifto, who can perfect that which he made crooked, essentially means that even God is imperfect. And that's a philosophy that the Chacham articulates. He'll say it explicitly in the next chapter. And it's a philosophy that we can't accept. The Chacham's ideology of resign yourself or to live a balanced life, but resign yourself to the imperfections. There are imperfections in this world. Man is not perfect. Then the Ne'enatan tried to perfect man. Sorry, the Amal tried to perfect man. Correct. Man is not perfect. Man is flawed. Agreed. The Ne'enatan said the world is perfect. I'm going to enjoy it. The Chacham says the world is not perfect. Balance it all out. But then the Yirei Elokim said that God is, right? We want to seek out God. And the Chacham's answer is even God is not perfect. That's where he fails. So in each one of these personalities, there's a moment of truth. There's a moment of profound insight that we need to kind of distill. But there's also a significant amount of problematic philosophy or heresy. And so what Kohelet will do at the end is he'll kind of siphon that out. And he'll sift from the Chacham, from the Ne'enatan, from the Amal. He'll take it all in, and he'll present at the very end of the book, in chapter 12 or 11, a balance to all of it. But we're not there yet. So right now the Chacham is in a very extreme place, where his attitude is, everything has a flaw, and therefore we need to accept the world with all of its flaws, including a God with all of his flaws. So that's where the Chacham's complexity comes in. In fact, he says it in the next piece. Does anybody have any other questions on this? I just want to.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yeah, no, I would like to ask. I would like to ask. You gave a pasuk that says to ignore the rulers of the city and go with the wisdom. So that actually is saying I'm not going with reality, but I'm going with something else. So it's not exactly sitting like what you're trying to say.
So you're jumping about two chapters ahead, which is correct. Which is, remember, each one of these personalities starts with a certain perspective, and then they fall into a trap.
Right.
The trap the Chacham will fall into is when he starts to look at who's running the world. And when he realizes that the world is being run by fools and not by the Chachamim, he gets very frustrated. And he gets so frustrated that he gets angry. And when the Chacham starts to get frustrated and angry, he falls into the very trap that he set for everybody else. So that's exactly what's going to happen to the Chacham. He's going to self-implode. But that's jumping ahead.
Okay.
Two chapters. So hold that point because it's very good, but it's anticipating where he's going to take the Chacham in a couple of steps.
Okay.
All right. So if we have 5 minutes left, let me just introduce you to the Yirei Elokim's reaction to the Chacham, and that will set us up, please God, for next week. So we're going to go back to the text and move to Pasuk Tet, no, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Kol ze nisiti b'chochma, amarti echkama vehi b'choka mimeni. All of this I tried in wisdom, I said I would become wise, but this is far from me. Which is a way of saying, in the language of Qohelet, again, in the language of Midrash, I could take any one of these sentences, pull it out, and give it its own significance. And so there is a whole Midrashic discussion, appears in the Gemara, about this sentence, Shlomo HaMelech, who wanted to be the wisest of all men, and he didn't understand, he understood every mitzvah except for Parah Aduma. Again, in the Midrash, there's a lot, you know, that's a different direction. But in our context, if he's talking about Chochmah, he's talking about the philosophy of the Chacham, which is one of our personalities. We've just introduced him to us in the first 22 verses of this chapter. In verse 23, he turns to this and he says, all of this I tested in wisdom. Again, in the real Kohelet is a personality of all four of these. So he's talking about himself. But in our context, one of the voices is respondent. I thought this was wise, but it turns out that this is very far, far from wisdom. Rachok mashaya, far off. Amok, amok, mimtzenu. It is far, it is deep. Too far and too deep can't be found. Mimtzenu. Sabot eni v'libi ladat v'latur uvakesh chokma v'cheshbon. I turn to seek, to know and to seek out and to understand wisdom, chokma v'cheshbon v'da'at, wisdom and understanding, resh hakesel, to know the wickedness is of fools, v'asichlut halilut, and the foolishness is madness. I wanted to understand the world. And what I came up with was, and here's where probably the most problematic sentence in the entire book we're going to have to understand and unpack. I found my conclusion after all my search that a woman, that a fate worse than death is a woman whose heart is snares and traps, whose hands are chains. Tov lifnei Elokim yimalet mimena v'chotei yilached ba. Whoever pleases God shall escape from her. The sinner will be ensnared by her. I'm at a loss to figure out. He went searching for wisdom. He went searching for understanding. He came up with this philosophy of the Chacham. He rejects it because it's too far, too deep, too outside the scope of what he thinks is correct. he went searching for wisdom, understanding, and his conclusion is that a woman who snares and traps is a fate worse than death. I don't know how we got from a philosopher, from the four personalities of Qohelet to a very bitter accusation against women. That needs to be unpacked. We will, Bezrat Hashem, do that next week. And then he continues and he says, but this alone I have found, says Qohelet. Achat l'achat l'mtzo cheshbon. I add one to another to disfigure it all out. Ashod biksha nafshi b'lo matzati. My soul seeks, I have not found. Adam echad me'elef matzati, v'isha b'cholela lo matzati. A man, one in a thousand. A woman, amongst all of them, I have not found. So again, twice he references this fact that he went seeking wisdom and he discovered that woman was a fate worse than death. It needs to be understood. However, levad re'ezem matzati. One conclusion, which is, asher asar elokim et adam yashar. Vehema bichu chishbonot rabim. God made man straight. Man searched for various accounts and crooked byways, but ultimately it was God who made man yeshar. So the question now becomes, who is speaking and what is he saying? The next chapter already is a different, it continues, but it's a different piece. I'm going to leave it alone. I want to spend next week addressing these verses and what's going on here. I will already tell you that things are not what they seem. And Qohelet is speaking in code, a code that is unique to the work of the philosophy of Tanakh. The fact that Qohelet is speaking in code is evident in the use of the feminine form of the verb Amra Qohelet, because in the rest of the entire book, it's Amar Qohelet in the masculine form. And here it's Amra Qohelet. She is speaking. So something's going on here. We need to unpack, we need to understand it. What I will tell you is, and I will leave you with this, that if you want to do a little homework in preparation for next week's class, my suggestion would be to glance through and do a quick cursory read of the first 11 chapters of Mishlei. Quick cursory glance through the first 11 chapters of Proverbs, of Mishlei, and hopefully we will sort it out next week. We'll do a quick overview of it, and that'll kind of help us understand what's going on in this text. So for that, I will leave you for now, and we will come back to all of this next week. I thank you for listening, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You, Rabbi.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, May, sure.
Yeah. You say amal all the time. Now, amal in Hebrew is toil. Now,
correct.
Somebody who works is amel. So why don't you call him amel and not amal?
You are probably, grammatically, you are probably correct.
Right.
Because I write all my notes in Hebrew without vowels. But you are probably correct.
Yeah, because, you know, like that's the verb, you know, amel or somebody. Yeah. But amal is the toil itself, and somebody who toils is amel.
Yes.
So I was wondering why you're saying that.
Yeah, you are correct. It probably should be the amel.
Okay, thank
accepted.
You.
Accepted. I will take that to note. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, thanks.